Submitter on my list is Doug Fraser. Afternoon and welcome.
Afternoon.
Thank you.
Bear with me while I get organised here. Well, good afternoon, gentlemen, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to this very important piece of planning history in Southland. So this is the most important submission I'll ever make, I think, as a farmer in Southland, and I've been doing it for some time, and you will note from my notes that I'm just been made a life member of Federated Farmers for my advocacy roles in the past. So I think it's a very important piece of, so I just hope I do it justice to that. Doug Fraser, I've got a BSc in chemistry, spent a lot of time working in governance roles, so I'm a chartered fellow of the Institute of Directors. I'm a sheep farmer and a dairy farmer, but I've got no vantage from this submission, no vested interest, because my sheep farm has actually been consented last year for conversion. Just a bit of history. Jan and I purchased 158 hectares at Groper's Bush, a rundown sheep farm, in 1986, right at the bottom of the downturn. It soon became apparent that the size of that operation would become an issue with returns from sheep and beef. And so 7 years later, in 1993, we converted to dairying. So it was on that first big rush, probably one of the first sheep farmers to convert properties. So this property here, left one to start it in. Okay. So it's not working here, I'm sorry. Do I run out of batteries or something? Do I push the left one to move forward?
Yes.
Go back, excuse me.
Yep.
Okay, sorry about that.
That's all right.
So moving on ahead, in 2001 we purchased another property in coastal south and at Round Hill. Again, another rundown sheep farm, which I tend to try and buy because of my economics. At that stage, none of the natives was fenced, none of the gullies were fenced. It was a very sad situation. So from income that we created from our dairy farm, we've developed this property. So we've done extensive draining, extensive fencing of natives, planting of the margins. You can see the margins around there, and put in 16 hectares of exotic forestry, done quite a lot of drainage. And that's the map's on the side, but you can see the extent of the natives. That's the green, and the exotic planting in the red. And there's been more exotic planting since that map was done. So we're very proud of that property now. So, and as I said, it's now able to be converted by that. Interestingly, that's a $35,000 document. That's what I had to go through to get a consent prior to the water and land plan. So to get one piece of... So an executive summary of the points that I made in my submission. I strongly opposed the PAN plan. The need for the plan hadn't been identified. The plan lacks equity. The physiographic modelling not endorsed as a regulatory tool. There's been inadequate analysis of the financial consequences of this plan, so I'll concentrate on that in this submission today. And plan will divide the community, and indeed the legal consequences will be significant in my view. Before I go on, I'd just like to make the case for flexibility in planning. This is a photograph on my dairy farm of my current effluent system. I wasn't happy with the effluent system that was being proposed at the time of large ponds collecting a metre of rainwater a year. So I worked together with my engineer and developed what I called a tank farm. So what we did was reduce the amount of water that we used in the dairy shed as much as possible with use of greenwash, etc., and contained all the effluent for storage in that in those tanks rather than an open pond, and obviously put in up to the date low rate irrigation system with all the necessary fail-safe mechanisms. So what it was interesting during that process, I have to say, yes, we're down near obstructive in the way that I tried to get to that, and we had to walk over broken glass a bit to try and get something new and an innovative. So I just really want to make the case that prescriptive regulation is not really the way to go. You've got to allow for innovation, and farmers are renowned for their ability to be able to adapt and innovate to situations that are put in front of them. So my opposition to the plan, it's a punitive and prescriptive plan, and it will fail to achieve the objectives because I believe you're alienating big parts of the rural community. Excuse me, I just might get a drink. And if you think of what happened down in Waituna, there was a lot of value destroyed down there by the rhetoric that went on around the problems on the Waituna Lagoon. But in the end, the farmers down there took things into their own hands, and with the support of the regulatory body, EES, and other interested bodies, have made a significant contribution to what's the water quality in the lagoon. So I implore you, don't end up in that situation here where you will alienate the farmers, alienate the people, destroy value, which I'll talk about shortly, and to get to achieve your aims. Water quality. Seems extraordinary, really, that the planners started planning this plan without checking the current water quality. There was 5 years of data sitting in this building gathering dust that had not been analysed when the plan was written. Going back a bit, Federated Farmers in 2012 commissioned Jim Cook to do an independent review on water quality. And the findings from that were that there was no clear link between water quality and change in land use. So it seemed extraordinary this data was sitting here and not being used. So Federated Farmers employed, again, another consultant, Tom Heller, to look at the 5 years of data that hadn't been analysed. Fortunately, Environment Southland decided that they would analyse the data, and of course Tom looked over their shoulder to ensure that that was done completely. So here we have this state and trend data that was produced by Environment Southland, was released on the 13th of April 2017. Now that was after the notification of the plan in June 2016, after the submissions were all put in, and after the Section 42A was done. So I believe a clear problem in the way that this plan was put together. So to give a taste of the sort of things that were said by Mr. Heller, based on the water quality data, the hold-the-line approach is already being achieved on a regional basis. Stream ecological health is mainly dependent upon variability of dissolved reactive phosphate concentration, and changes in nitrate are secondary. Regional nitrate concentrations over time in surface streams and groundwater reflect a stable or slightly improving trend. So, to summarise that, water quality is not a function of land use. Indeed, riparian management, irrespective of the land use, is the key to holding the line. Physiographics. Physiographic risk methodology suggests that across a large part of Southland, increasing nitrate concentrations in groundwater appear inevitable. That does not appear to be the case when referring to the ES water report, quality report. So that's not ground tested, and I'll talk about my particular case there. The $35,000 document I had here, part of that process was we had consents officers sitting here in this building using the physiographic modelling, which again was developed at a desk, to decide whether my property was suitable for dairy conversion. So it was found to be greatly wanting, you know, both on topography and the ways the soils reacted. And they didn't have to go far to check that out, because Top of Climate told us all this stuff many, many years ago. It told us how the soils would react. You know, I didn't have to go to an expert. I had to go to an expert to convince the staff that it was right, but I didn't have to go far to find out that that was incorrect. So let's be very careful about the use of physiographics. Indeed, I'm suggesting they should be right out of the plan. Perhaps they could be used by farmers to manage good management practice, but as I've found, and as many of my colleagues have found, not suitable at all, even for that. Rural-urban divide. The focus in this plan is completely on rural land use. If we look back, the farming sector have made massive changes in the way that they're managing their properties, and that's reflected in the water quality data that's been presented in 2017 by ES. I often say, you know, how would the urban sector feel if their occupancy rate of their houses was grandparented the same way that our stocking rate on farms was grandparented? So if you take an example of a widow in a four-bedroom house in Gladstone, given the latest information on ICC sewerage systems and their inability to be able to manage what's happening in Invercargill and their stormwater systems and the sewerage going into the local streams, let's grandparent occupancy in Invercargill. Let's have no greenfields production of houses. Let's stop that. And then the widow with her four-bedroom home that's moving to a retirement village would have to sell that house to a person that would only occupy it with one person. That's essentially what's being asked in the farming sector, that we cannot change our stocking rate or intensity on the farm. So it's very evident, I would have thought, that what that would do to the value of that property. And of course, that's what's happening in a rural sector. And we'll come to that now. So you would have seen in my submission there's been contributions from three people: Grant Barron, a registered valuer; Peter Moynihan, who's a senior banker and farmer; and John Hay, who was director of Southern Wine Real Estate. So what they're doing is trying to give some perspective for what this plan has already done and will do in the future around competence and land values in this province. First of all, Grant reminded us that the RMA asked us to provide for the social, economic and cultural well-being of the community, so we need to keep that in mind. But he said that the market value of a property reflects the asset's highest and best use. And this provides, and thus he provides a valuation methodology working on the percentage capitalisation of EBITDA. But this plan cuts right across those basic market fundamentals. And I'll just read out that last comment. There are few equal or higher land use participants to dairying in south of market at present. There is a considerable value gap between the next lowering supporting alternative land use of sheep and beef or arable. So I'll move on to the comments of Peter Moynihan. So he's a banker, he's actually a South Island manager of agribusiness and one of the major banks. And these are his personal comments and are not necessarily the views of the bank, so I'm very careful to say that. We will see changes in land values and income potential. and he comments on the reluctance to buy in the Waitunga catchment, and of course that's reflected in the values that people are prepared to pay to buy a property down there. In with regard to convertible properties in Southland, he's saying that you may see land dropping between $4,000 to $8,000 per hectare. So for a 200 hectare property, that we're talking between $800,000 and $1.6 million loss in value for that property. And interestingly enough, when I did the got the conversion for that property of mine, I asked my consultant to run the figures on it, and he thought that the value of that piece of document, my $35,000 document, was about $1 million in value. So that's the potential you're taking off hundreds of farmers now by providing a system which differentiates properties based on physiographics and then grandparent current land use, and taking away the property right of that farmer to stock that property as he wishes. Then he also went on to comment on, Peter went on to comment about the changes of values that may occur in dairy properties that are already in the physiographic zones, Old Matara and Peak. And he thought there could be a discount of in around 25%, but it was an estimate on his part. So there's going to be a reluctance to move in and buy properties, dairy properties, in those zones now, just as there is a reluctance to go in and buy properties in the Waitunga catchment now. And then he goes on to add that the risk factors for banks need to be assessed, and he believes there'll be significant casualties. John Hay. John Hay is the director of Southern Wide Real Estate, the biggest real estate agency in Southland for farms. He comments that dairy support and convertible properties have already shown the largest reduction in sales activity in Southland, and by definition, reduction in land values. He estimated a 20% reduction in value, which is exactly in line with what Peter's, that's the middle of Peter's values as well. So, interesting comment he made. Conversely, land value does not. Conversely, land that does not comply with the new rules, that does comply with the new rules, or has manageable limitations, may increase in value. So, probably I'm speaking against my own best wishes here with a convertible property and a dairy farm in areas that are okay. So, credible response. You know, we're moving up to limit setting. Why would you spend all this time and effort on this land plan when water quality is heading in the right direction? That's the question I ask for you to consider. You need a credible response that looks at all the community, you know, not just farming, but rural, industrial, commercial. There needs to be equity in the way all people in the community are treated. This plan identifies winners and losers, and a legal challenge is inevitable. I know if I was in a situation where I hadn't protected my interest, and I protected my interest by getting a consent on my property for this very reason, there's hundreds of farmers out there that are in that position that can lose, if not hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars of value. They're not going to lie, sit around and wait while that happens to them. That's their family's inheritance. So I'd ask you to think very carefully about this. Is capital being stolen by, I think, an ill-conceived, poorly researched, inequitable, prescriptive and punitive plan? And families are going to fight hard to maintain their capital base. And just leave you with a couple of photos of our wintering process and our sheep heading for the hills. Happy to take any questions.
Yeah, thanks for that. Just before I ask the other panel members if they have questions, I'm just interested in this issue you raise about the fact that in your view the plan focuses only on the rural sector. That's a submission that we've had a number of times from farmer submitters to the process, and I struggle to understand that. By way of example, we had a whole hearing day the last time we sat where the territorial authorities presented their submissions to us, legal counsel and 14 witnesses, explain to us the issues they had with the plan and the way it dealt with their stormwater and wastewater network discharges. They very much see the plan as dealing and tackling with urban issues, and they have some major concerns about the way it does that. I'm just curious about why you think the plan only targets the rural sector.
Well, as I explained with my example of the widow in a four-bedroom home, if we're only talking about best management practice, and talk about best management practice for effluent and sewage in Invercargill, stormwater and sewage in Invercargill, you know, I've just been involved in the ICC hearings. You know, the sewage going out of their primary sewage ponds, and has been happening for years, 120 hours a year on average. There's engineered mixing points for the sewage and water, stormwater, in Invercargill, 18 of them. So as soon as you get a blockage or an overflow of one, it goes into the other. That's just like me putting my effluent system into the nearest tile and saying when the pump breaks down, it can go straight into the stream. That's happening now. That has been consented for another 15 years. I'd suggest to you that there's no equity in the way that the farming community has been treated compared with the urban community.
So is it your submission to us that the plan doesn't deal with wastewater and stormwater network discharges?
No, I'd say it doesn't deal with it equitably.
And what does that mean?
Well, as I said, you know, if occupancy of homes in Invercargill was treated the same way as stocking rate for farms in Southland, then it would be equitable, but it's not. There's no hit on the average householder in Invercargill. There's no requirement for them to even get their act together as far as their stormwater system. They've just been given another 15 years, for God's sake, for a stormwater consent. You know, the average consent, well, the maximum consent for farmers is 10 years. And if you're non-complying, like ICC are, it would be 5 or less. Mm. So what I'm not talking about whether they're part of the plan, I'm talking about the equity and the way they're treated by the plan.
Okay. The territorial authorities might agree to disagree with you, and it's not our job here to argue with you, it's our job to elicit through our questions that we clearly understand the points you're making.
Yeah, very good.
So I'll see if we have any questions for you.
Just too briefly, Doug, in your submission, you've talked about capital value. Have you thought about cash flow as being a determinant for capital value?
Well, that's what Grant suggested, that the way to affect, you know, to come to a valuation on property is take EBITDA, and they've done some calculations over, you know, an extended period of time, where 4.7 is the right capitalisation value for dairying. When he did do his calculations on the sheep industry, it was actually only about 1.1, 1.2. But he suggested that was probably a bit low. But it could be back down there if you have a plan that precludes big sectors of the farming community from converting. You know, that's the sort of percentage you will get. 1.1 times EBITDA for a sheep farm versus 4.7 EBITDA for a dairy farm, the gap between the valuation of those profits is going to be enormous. That's why I grabbed a consent on my sheep farm. I don't particularly want to convert it. You know, I might come to Environment South in a year's time and say, will you give me another 5 years consent? Why do I pay another $35,000? But will you, for the sake of the environment, give me another 5 years so I can carry on sheep farming? Because the perverse effect of this plan is that it protects the dairy sector, the one that I'm intimately involved in, while the sheep sector, sheep and beef sector, are being asked to pick up the bill and the loss of capital value.
Okay, and just my last question really is, you've made comment that you think the plan can be improved. Apart from, you've mentioned taking out the physiographic component of it, is there any other areas that you think we should be focusing on that would actually improve the plan to satisfy your concerns?
Well, as you'll note, I haven't got into the detail of the plan. But I suppose what I'm arguing, there's two major issues. The science, you get the science right, and the science said you don't really need the plan, so you can drop it. But I've always said that we should be working for good management practice, you know, and I've got an environmental plan for both of my properties. You know, I use track map when I apply fertiliser, I get an agronomy test, I soil test every year. You know, I do all those good management practice things, and I'm happy to show my farm off to anybody. You know, and I have asked senior staff from Environment Southland to come out and look at what we're doing with the drainage and farm management. They've never taken me up on the offer, but you know, that offer still remains. I'm proud of what I'm doing, environmentally and from a farming point of view. But don't make prescriptive, punitive plans that affect people's livelihoods.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, it's a bit hard to adapt your comments to specific points in the plan, so I'll ask a general question first. And you seem to be saying that the market kind of should rule. That's my interpretation, which you might want to disagree with that. So there's a bit over 600,000 cows now in Invercargill, in Southland, on about, 18% Class 1 and 2 land, or somewhere about there. Do you believe in your heart that that could double in the next 5 or 10 years without an impact?
Yes.
You do?
Well, see, the point is, Eric, we did that work in 2012, and it clearly showed that there was no relationship between land use and the way the water quality data was going. And then we moved to 2017. Now, I was confident to ask the Federated Farmers Exec to fund some more work on this, because I was confident that there was enough indicators from the 2012 work to show that because we're getting smarter about what we're doing on the farm, those sort of things can be mitigated.
Okay.
Well, then I've had 3 state-of-the-art effluent systems on my farm in 24 years. Now, unlike the ICC, who want to get 35 years, you know, and spending 1% updates there on their stormwater system, I have to update it every 10 years, well, less than every 10 years. And each one of them was state-of-the-art at the time. Now, if we're not getting an improvement from that, I'll be very disappointed. I spent $250,000 on my last system 4 years ago. It's a significant investment.
Okay, let's come to the plan then. So you're talking about having punitive rules. So if you've had a look at Appendix N and farm environment plans, yep, and good management practices.
Mm-hmm.
So if we were to make the plan work that would suit you, if those kind of activities were adopted, do you think that there should be some shorter route to an approved activity?
Not very much, so.
Yeah, so that's the way you'd like to see the plan go.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
And it has to be those plans, those farm environment plans. I see I've got one for each farm, but really, they weren't my plans. They came. I had a representative from Environment Southland come out and do the plans. And I said, oh, I've got a plan. And he said, where is it? And I said, well, it's in my head, you know. And that plan has to be very flexible on the farm, because, you know, the economics of farming are not always straightforward.
So then let's cut to the chase. How could that environment management plan be improved then, if we're wanting to get better outcomes?
Well, I'm not sure. I've got these 2 environment plans, and I gather that they wouldn't fit the bill compared with what's being suggested in this plan, but I'm not sure. But I mean, say, it's all about engaging with the farmer. Some farmers will need help, and some farmers will be doing the same. But if you've got a template, at least give the farmers a chance to have a crack at it.
So template's the key.
Yeah.
Right.
And good farm practice, you know, go out and engage with farmers. Don't alienate them. Engage with them.
Good afternoon. You've given a wide-ranging submission, really, not specifically focusing on specific points in the plan. So I'm interested perhaps in your effluent farm. Is that the only one that you showed of the photo in the photo there?
Mm-hmm.
Are there others of that type, or is that your...
Well, I gather there has been others, but I know there were some farmers stopped from doing that type of system straight after I did it because they didn't believe it would work. And I've had two shear milkers on our property since that, and they said it's the greatest system ever, because, you see, we've minimised the amount of effluent we have to put out. You know, we don't catch rain. They drive past it every day, so they can see the flag how much is there. Just push the button as they go past, bring the cows in. It's a very simple system, and it doesn't take very long to get rid of the effluent that's in the thing. And of course, that's when we did the pond calculator originally, they said there was only 10 tanks needed, 10 33,000 litre tanks. And of course, when we came in here with that, they sort of laughed at us and said, you can't do that, that's not enough thing. So we ran it past them again, and they insisted that I have more tanks. So we put in some more tanks, but we don't need that capacity because we've eliminated, you know, we're keeping the amount of effluent to a minimum. And when we do get the window of opportunity to put it out, when the conditions are right, it takes very little time to put it out. But it didn't fit the model. It didn't fit the prescription. So be very careful about that. Farmers are very good at adapting.
So the above ground structure that you do see on some farms, single container, would that be an easier...
Same principle, and but again, a lot of them collect water. They don't have a cover on them. You know, I was keen on this idea. The engineer and I worked it out because eventually we may be able to even capture methane from that as well. So it is we can have a sealed system if we wanted to seal it up. But we don't. The point is, we don't keep the effluent in there long anyhow. We try and get it out straight out. It's more effective on the farm as manure than it is sitting in a tank.
Thank you.
Yes, you said in your submission, and you mentioned it twice today, the quote, I think it's a quote from Mr. Cook, who did an independent review of South Hedge Rivers and stream water quality,
yep.
And said that there was no clear link between water quality and change of land use.
Yep.
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, it's a while since I've read it. That's the report. I did send it to you. Well, you'd probably have to ask Mr. Cook about that. It's a while since I've read it. But that was the conclusion of the report, because they found that essentially, as the water quality wasn't declining in line with the number of increased dairy consents operations in Southland. So if you would expect a direct relationship between the number of dairy farms and the water quality, you would expect them to be moving in parallel. But in fact, they weren't. They were going in opposite direction.
So it's in your submission, though. You said that, so I guess you believe that too.
Yeah, right? I strongly believe it, yeah.
And so do I take it to mean that there is no effect of intensive farming on water quality, is that?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there's no relationship between the amount of dairy farms, because this is the point, we're getting smarter about managing these things. You know, I'm not a doomsday sort of type person. You know, I've just spent $250,000 on upgrading my effluent system 4 years ago. If I didn't think there was some beneficial effect from that, I'd feel a bit miffed about having to do that. So, you know, as we get smarter about managing these things, and we allow innovation, and we allow science to take it, have its role, you know, you've got 9 billion people in the world at the moment. You know, we have to adapt to those sort of things.
Okay. Well, I think I understand that better now. Thanks.
Yeah.
Just 2 questions for you. In terms of that report that you did pre-circulate, Diffuse Sources Limited, March 2013. So the Jim Cook report, Diffuse Sources Limited. March 2013. If you could just, not now, but later on, highlight the passage that you're referring to where Dr. Cook draws the conclusion that you said he did, that would be helpful. Because I've word searched the document and can't find it. So if you can point out where that is, that would be helpful. Just a question, though, in terms of the report that you had done for your conversion, did it quantify the change in nutrient losses before and after conversion? And if so, what did it tell us about
that? I can't remember that now, it's in the 2015. But yeah, there's significant changes in nutrient losses.
Roughly from what to what, can you remember?
I can't remember, but I can get that back to you if you wish.
So was it an increase in nutrient
loss? Oh, yeah, yeah. That's the perverse thing about this plant. It's farmed with the biggest environmental footprint are being protected by it. While those that haven't exercised the option to convert up till now will take the capital hit.
All right, thanks very much for coming in. I think it's the end of our questions.
Thank you.